it looks like there's a record voter turnout pattern across the nation, including Alaska, on this election day. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. What are your feelings this election day? If you voted, what was it like this morning at the polls? Call us up and tell the rest of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255, toll free, that's 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call of 550-8422. Email talk at APRN.org. Some reflections on the democratic process and separation of powers on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP, proud to support public broadcasting in Alaska. From resource issues to recreational activities, APRN brings you the up-to-date information you need for life in Alaska.
Well, the electoral process is the exercise of the will of the people in a constitutional fashion. And we're open for your phone calls here at 1-800-478-8255. Because Talk of Alaska is a Tuesday program, we get to be on every election day, and it's always a pleasurable show because that's what's on people's minds. So we'd like to hear what's on your mind today, and we provided some very interesting guests for you to interact with. And first up is Kristen McMurray from Chicago. Kristen, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Kristen is the senior editor of something called Ballotpedia. It is a project of the Sam Adams Alliance, and it is a way that you can go into the web and check on ballot measures all across the country, including Alaska. In other words, Kristen, as I understand it, people can track ballot measures, and if they see something wrong with the way that they're described, they can go and change the content because this is a wiki.
That's right. That's what we always like to say, is that it's a wiki. You can go in, you can change it. Which is great because ballot measures are always developing as the election process goes on.
So you are a senior editor, which I guess means that you mediate this wiki process. And I don't think I've ever talked to a wiki editor before. I am thinking that sometimes you have to make judgment calls.
Yes. There's occasions where people think one thing's fact and other people think it's an opinion, and you kind of have to go and you have to mediate. And we always like to say, if there's something going on in a ballot measure, always expand on it. That's the best way to get everyone to get along. But there are wiki wars, and you know, people try and sway a page to go to one point of view and stuff like that. So
wiki wars.
Oh yeah.
I have to confess, you know, in my generation, it's tough for me to get used to things changing so fast. The wiki just kind of makes me feel a little seasick. But you're clearly at home with this process. And I guess we should add that the Sam Adams Alliance is kind of a, I don't know if you'd call it a libertarian organization, although maybe you would, but it's liberty-oriented, I guess we would say, in terms of wanting to empower the people.
Definitely, yeah. We're a free market group. We just want people to have this information and be able to do something with it. And we're trying to use new media tools to move that along. So,
well, it certainly appears that you're doing that. It looks like a good, clean site, it appears to be a fair site. So tell me, Kristen, obviously a lot of that's your work. Well, how has the response been?
It's been amazing. We've had people from all over the country that just call, and they're so grateful to have a spot where they can see the entire story of what's going on in their state. I mean, for ballot measures, there's a lot more than just that summary where you click yes or no. You have who's financing it. You have whether there was any challenges. There's actually a lot of litigation that goes on in ballot measures and a lot of money behind them as well.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons for that, you know, people criticize ballot measures is because lawmakers have professional staff that actually write law. And this is basically a citizen group that gets some notion or maybe even buys their way onto the ballot, like apparently Warren Buffett did in California with this election, to put something out there that may be deceptive and may be terribly bad law and lead to all sorts of litigation, which is, as we all know, very inefficient.
Well, that's one of the reasons that we're putting this information out there, is so citizens can make an informed decision. but I wouldn't say one or two ballot measures would reflect badly on direct democracy overall. I mean, it's the ultimate of democracy is to go out there and say, you know what, this should really be a law. I can't get it pushed through Congress. I'm going to try and do it myself. I mean, in the end, it's always in the hands of the voters.
Yeah, do it yourself. What it does seem that, I mean, I've noticed that the ballot measures in Alaska anyway, that there's a process, a consultation that the Division of Elections tends to go through with them in order to get them up to snuff. Would you say that's typical with other states?
Yes. There's only a few states that don't go through that process to make sure that it's not already conflicting with the state constitution or other laws that are already in effect. So you usually have to pass that muster.
Your ideology, are you one of those people, many states, Alaska is one of a number of states, I guess not a majority of states, but a substantial number of states that do not permit amending the Constitution by initiative, but do grant the people the power to write the laws and vote on them. Do you favor you know, personally from where you're coming from, amending state constitutions through the ballot?
Personally, yes, I do. I believe in as much citizen activism as possible on a personal level. So, I mean, in my opinion, legislators have to earn their respect, and citizens do too. So if they're proposing a good idea, then I'll vote for it.
Well, all right. Thank you.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's, you know, I can see changing constitutions could get a little dicey from time to time because you're talking simple majority rule. And when you have three branches of government plus this initiative process, you're dealing with, I guess you would call it checks and balances. And you could say if you give initiative too much power. Isn't there a question that the majority has too much power then?
Well, I guess what I would say is if the majority passes it, then honestly there was enough support for it. So I would say that it's in the hands of the people. And I trust the people over career politicians any day.
Well, we had a ballot measure that was, I think there was even an organization called Trust the People that was pushing it. So they clearly would agree with you. Okay, thank you, Kristen McMurray of Ballotpedia. We're going to start with our phone calls, if it's okay with you.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
All right. Thanks, Kristen. Let's go to Bethel, where Pat joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I just went and voted, and the worker made me take off my Army veteran for McCain pin before I voted. They weren't going to let me vote unless I took it off.
I think that's standard, isn't it? No electioneering? Yeah, I think maybe that's just the rules.
Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. How did you feel about it, that?
Well, as long as they're fair. I mean, if I walked in for an Army veteran for Obama pin, maybe hopefully they would say to take that off too, but I don't think there are any Army veteran for Obama pins.
I don't know. if there are, I'm sure we live from them.
Yeah, I'm sure if there is, there's not very many.
All right, Pat.
Okay.
Thanks for your call. Thanks for your call from Bethel, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. We're talking about the democratic process and empowering the people on Talk of Alaska today. Of course, it's election day, and we have a fascinating election in Alaska. We're not here to electioneer on those issues, however, but to kind of broaden it out to the whole way that we do things, that we accomplish the business of governing. And we're having a fascinating conversation with Kristen McMurray, who is with the Sam Adams Alliance and is running Ballotpedia, which is a wiki that you can use to find out about ballot measures all across the country. Well, this time in Alaska, Kristen, all we've got is a bond issue. There are no initiatives on this ballot. They all showed up in the primary election ballot instead. But we do tend to have some really fascinating ones. You probably have noticed some patterns through the years about what Alaskans vote on.
Oh, yes, definitely. Your capital location has definitely been controversial over the years. And I have to say, your primary ballot measures were very controversial. What a story.
Yeah, you know what happened, though, was that people just voted every single one of them down. And it's actually a mystery to many people as to why that happened, whether the campaigns were so intense and so much money was spent that it could be that there was a backlash or a voter disgust factor where the voter said, look, you know, enough of all of this. I'm saying no to all of it. We can come back to this later.
Oh, that definitely happens. There's a saying, if you don't know, vote no.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that definitely happens a lot. So,
I am wondering, of course, Alaska is almost the youngest state. Hawaii is a little bit younger than Alaska. But Alaska, when the Alaska Constitution was being written, they were very cognizant of what was going on in all the other states, and they tried to balance this power of initiative. And I'm wondering how you feel about how well they did. Because, you know, I could tell your ideology, okay, is you would rather that we did have the power to amend the Constitution. But what they did is they deliberately limited this power. So it doesn't include amending the Constitution, although you could argue that you can get a ballot measure that's advisory and get such a convincing majority for it that legislators feel they have to bring about a constitutional amendment, and that we've had things come close to that a couple of times. But generally speaking, you know, the way that works in Alaska is that the initiative can be changed after 2 years by the legislature anyway, and it's really kind of up to the courts. You know, if you get a one with a lot of economic impacts, the legislature will probably come back after it's passed and pass something close enough to it to get through the courts. I'm wondering how you feel about that process. Once again, we get back to all that litigation.
Now, litigation is really where ballot measures have been suffering, not only in Alaska, across the nation. And while I agree there's definitely some improvements that could be made to the Alaska Citizen Initiative process, I have to say that I'm proud the state enacted it from the beginning. I mean, like you said, you're one of the youngest states, and you allowed for the initiative process to happen at all. I mean, there's a lot of states in America where they don't even have that option. So, I mean, on that level, I endorse Alaska for doing that. But like you said, there's a lot of improvements to be made, and especially with the court system as far as ballot measures go.
From time to time, we get the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court agrees to come on the program here. And one thing that usually when they decide on these ballot measures, it ends up in the Supreme Court because people want to get the word of the highest court in the state about it. And historically, what happens is the court, when in doubt, upholds the power of initiative, upholds the power of the people as opposed to legislators or executive. In other words, they say, look, this is the way our Constitution is, and they give the weight towards the presumption, I guess you would say, towards the voters. So we do now have a trail of precedent in Alaska that goes in that direction, to the point where when people file their litigation, they're very aware of all that.
Right.
Let's go to Fairbanks, where Gina joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Gina.
Hi, I wanted to make your first caller feel better and let him know that I had to remove my Obama button that I forgot I was wearing, because you can't have any kind of political statements within 200 feet of the polls. And it's a beautiful, sunshiny morning in Fairbanks, and I'm on the way to get my 80-year-old mother to take her to vote for Obama. And my mother grew up in southern Louisiana in the 30s and 40s. and she was only allowed to go to the seventh grade because of her race. And the fact that in her lifetime she gets to vote for the first black president is, I mean, it chokes me up just thinking about it.
I think it's a very emotional election for many people, Gina, and I really appreciate you sharing that. So she's how old again?
She's 80.
And you're just about to pick her up and take her to the polls.
I'm almost to her house to pick her up and take her to the polls. And I didn't think I'd see it in my lifetime, and I'm only 49, and she's 80, and she gets to see it. She gets to cast her vote for possibly our first black president.
Gina, thanks a lot for your call.
Mm-hmm.
That's Gina in Fairbanks, and getting emotional about elections, politics, of all things. Let's go to Jerry. Jerry's a program from Kenai. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jerry.
Hi. One of your earlier callers said that he didn't think there were any veterans for Obama.
And especially no veterans for Obama buttons.
Well, there is one. I wasn't able to get one. Another fellow here got the last one, but...
You mean the demand was so high that they they ran out?
Well, apparently, but I just wanted to say that I'm proud to be an honorably discharged Korean veteran. I enlisted in the Marine Corps on my 18th birthday, and I'm also proud to have voted for Obama.
All right, Jerry, thanks. Thanks for calling up and answering the earlier call.
Okay.
Great. Yeah, if you're having any... Thank you, Jerry, for your call from Kenai. If you're having... if you had an experience at the polls, if you had to wait a long time, if you voted early, of which we had more than 50,000 people did, and you'd like to join us and talk about how and why and so forth and what all this means, give us a call at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. The democratic process is the subject on Talk of Alaska, and with us right now is Kristen McMurray of Ballotpedia, which tracks ballot measures on the web. Okay, Kristen, what is the website?
It's www.ballotpedia.org.
And right now, what is getting the most traffic?
Oh, definitely one of the most controversial ones is California's Prop 8 for the gay marriage. That's getting a lot of hits.
And this is basically, I think we had one of these in Alaska at a certain point too, but this is a definition of marriage for California because of the court rulings?
Right. This would overturn the court rulings in California, and it would make it part of the state constitution. So there would be no future court dates or any other kind of amendment to it.
So when you go into your office and click on your computer and start to work on the wiki, do you tend to find that there's all kinds of people that have wanted to change the wording about, you know, the description of this one?
Yeah, we've been having a huge amount of enrollment to do that. We're getting over 50 new users a day who want to put their
Sounds like a cell phone.
Sorry.
Oh, it's all right.
Their own wording on the articles.
We're all plugged in and twittering these days. By the way, if you want to put your comment in by email, you can do it at talk@aprn.org. Just had to do that. Yeah, so people have to register in order to work on the wiki then, huh?
Yeah, we did that. When we initially started the wiki, we had it open to everyone. But what that mostly resulted in was spam bots. So it's really easy. You just go in, you register, and then you can write whatever kind of language you think most describes your state initiative.
Spam bots.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Spam bots are just, it's a computer program that's designed to attack MediaWiki, which is the software we use, sites. So they come in and they'd write their own articles that have nothing to do with politics or anything like that. It'd be describing products in Japan or something like that.
Russia.
So, yeah, we'd show up in the morning. We'd be like, well, what's this, you know? And so we had to do a lot of deletion and that kind of thing when we initially got started.
So even though it's a little bit counter to your liberty-oriented principles, you had to make people register.
Yeah. So, but none of the pages are locked for the election, so anyone can edit any of the articles.
All right. Let's go to Pam, who joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Pam.
Oh, thank you very much.
How you doing?
Oh, it's a good day, and I voted early. But I wanted to ask the question why we can't vote earlier than we do. I think it's only like a 2 or 3 week advance. A lot of people in Alaska, you know, they're 3 weeks on and 3 weeks off. They can't get a mail absentee ballot. They can't vote. People out in the rural areas have to go hunting. So why can't we have a little longer period to accommodate true Alaska living?
Well, that's a good comment, and I honestly don't know if that is statutory or exactly how that works. I don't imagine it's constitutional, but it could be.
It might have to do with having the most updated voter roll available to you, because what they do is they have to check your address and, you know, that you're at the right location and that you're not a made-up person. So it'll help prevent voter fraud.
Well, we have, Pam, as I understand it, campaigns nowadays are kind of encouraging people to do early voting and providing them with the forms and all like that. So it is
you have to submit it within a certain time period, and if you're not there to receive the mail, you can't then turn it in. Our voter rolls, actually, we're such a small state that they're not that difficult to maintain. And at least at one point, the state government was really good about its electronic governance measures. And out in the villages, there's no way even to vote early there because they don't have the staff and such to do it in person. But if you're going to Bethel for, a meeting that day, can you vote in Bethel? Can you vote early if you're going to AFN convention?
Yeah, and of course you can.
You can in some places, like Anchorage. But if you're going upslope or out of the country and you hit that three-week period, you can't do it at all.
Yeah. All right, Pam. Thanks. Maybe we can delve into this a little bit. I'm sure Gail would be glad to come on and talk about all this.
Or by post office.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I remember we had Fran Ulmer on one time when she was lieutenant governor, and conversation really veered over into this whole process of voting. And at that time, you know, she was all for more technology. I think now people might be a little suspicious about the technology.
Well, she did quite a bit to make technology serve the people of Alaska. And,
yeah.
And we made great strides before any other state did on getting government accessible.
All right, Pam. Well, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Let's try one more. This one from Kasilov. Lise, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi. Hey, hi. My wife voted Kasilov at the Tustamina Elementary School. It must have been somewhere in the vicinity of 7:30. And there was already a kind of a steady flow of voters. It wasn't backed up, but it was steady.
Oh, that's good news.
That's what I said. And the other thing I wanted to ask about, And maybe your guest speaker will know the answer to this. Absentee ballots, and I was an election judge years ago in the paper ballot period, absentee ballots aren't counted until a week later or something. What about all these early votes? A lot of people are voting early by using absentee ballots. Does that mean if we've got 50,000 people that voted early, we're not going to find out election results for a week?
Well, yeah, I doubt that Kristen's going to know, but I will tell you what we heard from the Division of Elections is that they actually, most of those get in on election night, and they come in pulses, so it's not it doesn't wait until later, not that much later. The question ballots take longer.
Okay. So it's the question ballots that get mostly done a week later? Because I think the paper this morning said something about, like, for instance, if you mail in a vote, as long as it's postmarked, you have up to 10 days.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, if the vote's not there, obviously they can't count it.
Right.
But they do, it's really funny because when you're in Election Central, you can actually watch this pulse of absentees come in sometime around 10 o'clock or so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that, and I don't remember. You know, I've listened to some election night covering and don't remember them mentioning much about absentee votes. So,
well, this is my experience. That's the way it is, and I'm sure somebody will call up and clarify that if I got it wrong. Thanks, Lise.
Yeah, I was out to sea once. I think it was one of the few elections I missed because the mail just didn't make connections. I think I got my ballot the day after the election.
You know, that can be really problematical when you're in the service.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's already...
Yeah, go ahead, Kristen.
Oh, I was just going to let you know there's already been some record of that this year where some of the military men have been mailed ballots, but it was for a local Puerto Rico election instead of the U.S. ballot. So there's definitely, there's always glitches in every election.
All right. Thanks, Lise. Thanks for your call. We got Michael in Juneau who says he is a Navy voter for Obama, and he figures one Navy vet equals several Army vets.
No.
See, this is what talk radio is made of. Pierre joins the program from Kotzebue. Pierre, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, thank you. I'm another Army veteran for Obama, and to tell you the truth, I was really undecided until the last minute. And what changed my mind was the basically the fear-mongering with the Republicans and turning it into an us or them thing. You know, it's supposed to be we in this country, not us or them.
So you decided to go for Obama, and the deciding factor,
yeah,
as it turned out, is just like you were nervous giving your vote to someone who was fear-mongering.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And I met John McCain before a long time ago. He's from a state with a lot of Native Americans.
Yes.
And he is some Indian policy thing. And so I went to listen to see how he was, you know, and he impressed me. He's a nice guy. You know, I shook his hand. He's another veteran. You know, we talked for maybe a minute, and, you know, I'm pretty sure he doesn't remember me. He's a short guy, by the way.
Yes. And you're not, Pierre.
No, I'm not. But, yeah, so basically, yeah, that was my decision. You know, the Republicans doing a little fear-mongering there at the end, I thought. And but I do appreciate the governor on Saturday Night Live.
All right. Thank you very much, Pierre. Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Good to hear from Kotzebue. 1-800-478-8255 is the telephone number. We did have a note on the email here. There's a caller from, it doesn't say where, maybe McCarthy? Oh, because they're having trouble getting through on the 800 number. But just a note for the guy in Bethel, I voted this AM early and forgot that I had an Obama button on my vest under my jacket. It was peeking out. The election worker immediately asked me to put it in my pocket or zip up my jacket. I knew better than to have worn the button, but hurrying at 7 a.m., I overlooked it, and I am glad she was vigilant.
It is nice to hear.
Yes, I want to thank you for being on the program, Kristen, and wish you the best with Ballotpedia.
Oh, thank you for having me.
If you would repeat the website one more time, and we'll go ahead and make a link to it.
Sure. If you need to check out any of your ballot measures, just go to www.ballotpedia.org.
All right.
All right.
Thank you very much. Kristen McMurray is a senior editor at Ballotpedia, which is a project of the Sam Adams Alliance. And she was talking about how you can track ballot measures all across the country through a wiki. Through a wiki on the web. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the democratic process. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and on the web at talk@APRN.org as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the University of Alaska, the home of award-winning faculty, students, and alumni, and offering 500 different degrees and certificates. Find one that's right and do something major. Information at alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
It's Talk of Alaska on Election Day. Did you vote today? If so, what was it like? We've had some interesting observations. One person who found themselves very emotional. Another person wore a button and was told to take it off. And then a whole flood of people saying, yeah, well, you're supposed to take those buttons off. You can't wear them in the polling place because that's electioneering. And we're trying to avoid electioneering. We're not pushing this or that candidate or this or that measure or anything like that here on Election Day. This is a day for you to deliberate and make up your own minds. But we are interested in your voting experience, and we're interested in talking about the broader issues of the democratic process. Election Day, we always have a Talk of Alaska on Election Day, and it's always fascinating because people are very reflective about their democratic process. 1-800-478-8255, the telephone number, 1-800-478-TALK. Shall we move to another call here? Okay, let's go to Carol, who joins the program from Wasilla. Carol, you're on Talk of Alaska.
Well, thank you for talking to me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, I want to say I have spent the last 7 years in China, and I did not spend them in Beijing, Shanghai, or where there was a lot of Western people. I was in central China in a small city called Shangfan in Hubei province. And America, despite all of its troubles, warts, and good things, people, we don't really realize how good we have it until you live with people that don't have what we have. And they could not believe, really believe, that I could at any time badmouth my president, my governor, or whoever, and they can't really believe, or it seems to be something they can't even put in their thought process, that we can go out on the internet and find information such as your guest on the show today, her website has. To them, that is just completely a foreign idea. They cannot even imagine that kind of freedom. So, you know, maybe we complain and gripe and we get upset about things, but still, even America with all its warts has the best process going.
Carol, thank you for that reflection on this election day about China. You know, my experience of the Soviet Russia was that people, you know, they found our freedom hard to believe, our freedom of speech, but that didn't mean that they believed their own government. Did you find some of that same in China?
The older people, I would say, maybe say, okay, I am on the, what is it, downside of 50.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, maybe my generation still doesn't question the government, but I would say probably the younger people, the 30 to 40-ish people are beginning to very much question their government, but they don't have the processes that we have to change it. And While we can go to the polls today and vote for Obama, or we can vote for McCain or any of the third party people, and make small changes in our government, or even make big changes in our government, they have no concept of how to do that, because everything is Beijing. What Beijing says is what we do. They don't even have a concept sometimes of how to help themselves, because Beijing tells them everything. I had a student, which I taught English in China, and I taught at the college level, and I had a student one time say that the thing that he admired the most is, I could say I didn't like a particular president and nothing would happen to me. He said his father said that he didn't like Jiang Zemin, and actually lost his job, which meant he lost his house, he lost his retirement, he was sent to a re-education camp. You know, we can't even, you know, I don't think we Americans can fathom something like that. Saying something so innocent as, I don't like President Kennedy, and end up in a prison camp.
No.
I mean, we just can't understand that. So they really want change. The younger people do want change. They just don't have the process that we have.
Carol, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All right. Carol, with a perspective from China, and we're joined in the program now by an actual presidential candidate, so maybe this is electioneering. Let's see, because he usually gets a lot of votes in Alaska. Ralph Nader, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, hello, Alaska. Thank you, Steve.
How are you doing today?
We're doing well, and I'm glad to be able to talk to Alaskans, because I want to show them how much I've done with and for Alaska, just as a background to our discussion. When I was a law student at Harvard Law School, I took off the better part of a summer and went down to Washington and lobbied for Alaska and Hawaii statehood.
Really?
That's how far, yeah. And I sponsored a book by Peter Grinstein and Hanrahan on Alaska about 20, 25 years ago. Peter challenged Congressman Young years ago, and he's a trial lawyer in Fairbanks. I founded ACPIRG, a wonderful, small, but effective group that Steve Kahn and others have headed back in 1974. And I hope they're going to win their campaign finance initiative today. I wrote a law review article on Alaska Native rights, fought Exxon for decades on Exxon Valdez, helped Steve Kahn fight the attempt to merge BP and ARCO, and visited Alaska more than all the other candidates put together in 2000, 2004. Was there last year in Juneau and Ketchikan, and participated in an anti-war rally in a wonderful wooded square in Juneau with local Alaskans. And, you know, I just have been involved a lot in Alaska. We had to get 5,900 signatures to get the Nader Gonzalez ticket on the ballot for Alaskans to support. And I've always fought for privacy as an Alaska constitutional right. And Native Americans, well, Native Alaskans, we help them with their energy needs. They're being abandoned, as you know, these villages, real tough times. And the great permanent fund, no taxation of the permanent fund. Now, Obama hasn't visited Alaska, he's got a steep learning curve. We want to provide Alaskans with a choice, and I've got the credentials. I've done more in and with Alaskans than McCain and Obama multiplied many times. Well, and that's the way I like it. I want to earn my votes. Matt Gonzalez, a great civil rights leader and lawyer in San Francisco, he wants to earn his votes. And we're making this direct plea for Alaskans to support a candidacy that will help build a third political force in America in the coming years.
That's exactly what I would like to ask you about. I appreciate, you know, we got a press release saying you would make yourself available after the election and on election night, but never did I dream I could actually get you on election day. you're probably going to, polling is giving you as much as 3%. And I wouldn't call that maybe a center of gravity, but nonetheless, you do speak for this third force, and that's kind of the stuff that we're talking about on the show today. We've had we had a guest talking about all the initiatives across the country, and it would appear that third parties are another way of bringing some new policy initiatives into the process. And I think there's no one who could argue that you have not done that. You seem to have done that over and over again. So what would you let's assume that John McCain wins the election. What is your counsel for him as from your position of having run against him?
Well, my counsel is stop being a Bush clone. I think that's what really was disastrous for him in terms of his losing the election. When he was independent and he was a maverick, he was a supporter of auto safety regulation. The Republican Party wasn't, for example. And he obviously campaigned finance support. Unlike Obama, he stuck with public financing for the general election period this fall. And he believes that global warming is a serious problem. But then, you know, he just flipped after the nomination, and he went toward Rush Limbaugh, and he went toward Reverend James Dobson, who demanded certain changes for their support. And so I would, I'd advise him in the Senate that he revert back to his independent-minded status. I think what hurt him also, he came across as a candidate of perpetual war. You know, more soldiers, more bases, more Iraq, more Afghanistan, aggressive toward Russia. People have had enough of that. I mean, the Bushes and Cheney have given them enough of that. And it's cost us money, cost soldier lives, millions of civilians in Iraq, quagmires, destabilization. So I think he should go back to the old McCain in the Senate. He'll be a minority senator, and he might be able to tip the balance on filibusters if the Democrats don't quite get 60 or 61 votes.
We're talking with Ralph Nader. He's running for president of the United States and joins us by telephone from his campaign headquarters. Ralph, I would like to also ask you about the bailout to the winner of the election, assuming it's not you, because I think I have some feeling for what you might do in that position or try to get through Congress. Where do you think the next president needs to go on this instabilities in the financial services area?
They've just got to stop these giant corporations from running our government. Taxation without representation is the way I described that $700 billion blank check bailout with a little window dressing from the Democrats. That, unfortunately, both Obama and McCain supported without reservations. It was the wrong bailout. It was the wrong way to do it. American taxpayers should not be saddled with these Wall Street speculators, swindlers, and crooks. They should have made the speculators pay for their own bailout. And they could have done it with a 0.1% sales tax on $500 trillion a year of derivatives trading. You know, FDR had a stock transaction tax, and earlier it helped fund our Civil War. There's nothing new about it. It just was abolished in our country after World War II. And so the Congress has to come back with, say, Obama's leadership, re-regulate the securities industry, give more authority to the institutional and individual shareholders who own the companies, but they don't control anything. The bosses at the top do. And if they had more authority, they would have put a stop to this. And finally, they got to make the speculators pay for it two ways, one by a sales tax, and second by criminally prosecuting the culprits with adequate number of resources provided the Justice Department. I don't know. Is there a sales tax in Alaska?
No, we don't have one. It's been talked about. Ralph,
You're one of the few that don't. But imagine millions of Americans, as we speak, are going to stores and they're buying necessities of life, appliances and clothing and furniture and so on. And they pay 6, 7, 8% sales tax, depending on the state. We don't have a sales tax on speculation. We have a sales tax on necessity.
I'm loving
That's what I wanted to discuss on the presidential debate platform, which I was excluded from.
Ralph Nader, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Talk of Alaska.
Thank you very much, Steve. And we hope to earn some votes in Alaska because we've stood for Alaska since 1958.
I do want to...
Alaska statehood.
Before I let you go, I have to say I loved your memoir book.
You mean 17 Traditions?
Yes, I think that's a wonderful book. I would never hesitate to recommend to anyone.
It's how my mom and dad raised their four children in the 30s and 40s
right.
in a factory town in Connecticut. Yeah, it's the only book I've ever written, Steve, that everybody loves.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks. Thank you very much, Ralph Nader. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, we got a stack of them here. Let's go to Van, who joins the program from the Seward Highway. So we may or may not get through. Hey, Van, are you with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can. Go right ahead.
Well, first I want to say that I voted for McCain, and I've been in Alaska 46 years, and I'm pretty confident and pretty sure that he'll win the presidency, and which I think is going to be good for several reasons. But one thing about Alaska I do want to bring up very important is I've been working with a couple of senators and want to work some more with them this up and coming years. One of the things in our election in the state of Alaska is that we not only vote for the national and the state level, but then you flip the ballot over, and naturally on the ballot in the back you have judges that are elected in the state for 10 solid years. And I'd like to see us get an election going, an individual election, a different election, to know these judges before you go seating one of them for 10 years.
I think it's retention over 10 years. The judges are actually appointed, so you don't even get to name them by election. Yeah. Van, it's interesting. I think it takes a constitutional amendment.
Yeah, it does, and that's what we've been working on and talking about because, my goodness, that's a long time for somebody to be seated in the state of Alaska, and 90% of the people up here, they go, they vote. They don't even have a clue who these people are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's very hard to unseat a sitting judge. Van, thank you very much for your call from the Seward Highway there. We'll let you get on down the road.
Okay, thank you much.
All right, thank you. We're joined now by Don Fowler, who is a board member of No Voter Left Behind, and you may recognize his name because Don used to be chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Don, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, I'm so happy to be with you. It's been about 3 years since I've been to Alaska, but it's a beautiful, wonderful state, and I'm sure that you and all your listeners are proud of it. I enjoyed it every time I've been there.
Well, Don, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this project, because I guess today has been kind of a busy day for this project of No Voter Left Behind. It's essentially an effort to secure the sanctity of the vote, as I understand it. There are a number of states where it's your opinion, your organization's opinion, that there's election fraud going on, and you're not talking Acorn.
Well, the election process in the United States is left in the hands of the states predominantly, and you've got 50 states in the District of Columbia, and people have different traditions. They use different machines and different procedures, and I personally think that there's more inefficiency in the election process than there is fraud or attempted disenfranchisement, and either fraud or disenfranchisement is bad. But No Voter Left Behind is dedicated to making sure that everybody's vote is duly registered and counted, and that people are encouraged and given the full opportunity to vote. And where we find, either because of inefficiency or because of somebody is nefariously trying to deprive people of voting or to vote improperly, we pursue that and just in the interest basically of good government and fair elections. We believe that everybody's vote should count.
Now, I understand that there's this website, www.novoterleftbehind.net, provides for people to be able to report today. If they see some kind of problem, they can go ahead and report on that and alert
that's
your
correct.
Organization.
That's correct, and CNN has a similar operation. But if people do run into difficulty, we do urge them to look at our website and to call, because No Voter Left Behind has arranged, particularly for areas where there have been trouble in the past, so that we can provide direct access and help people vote and vote efficiently and effectively, and they will not have their votes thwarted or put aside just because somebody wants to make trouble. And it's working.
Somebody told me last night that there are instances now documented where these Diebold voting machines are actually flipping, so people vote for one person and it goes to the other one every eighth vote or whatnot.
There is some evidence to that, it is being checked out, and I hope that to the extent that that was happening, it's been corrected. There are procedures in most of the states so that if you uncover a problem like that, you can get it corrected during the election. But standards from state to state are different, and in some states there are stricter standards and standards that require greater proof of effective operation before they're permitted to go into effect. There again, that varies from state to state. And whether it's from attempted fraud or just inefficiency or malfunctions, it's bad for the system. We need every vote to count as the voter intended it, and that's what our organization is about.
Well, obviously, as the former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, you'd like to see Obama win this election.
Sure,
and,
absolutely.
And there is the Obama constituency seems to involve a number of people who may be voting for the first time, a number of young people and so forth. Is the concern then that people running the polling places could intimidate them in some way? that, you know, like saying, no, you have to show me your driver's license, things like that?
There are indications clearly that in the past, some voting officials and some people acting for partisan or candidate reasons have attempted to intimidate first-time voters and voters that are not as familiar with the political processes as, say, college-educated middle-class folks. And some attempt to prey on these people who have limited experience and deny them their right to vote. If I may, as a personal example, we here in South Carolina, as you might know, have a fairly large African-American population. And for a number of years, and this goes back to the 60s and 70s and up into the 80s, but particularly in the 60s and 70s, there were deliberate attempts to intimidate newly enfranchised African-American voters. And on one election, I think in 86 maybe, we recruited a great number of attorneys and trained them what to do. And every time the slightest problem came, we sent a couple of attorneys to the voting place, and we cracked their knuckles. And, you know, that one experience where it was clear that everybody was going to have the chance to vote almost cured that problem in South Carolina. We have not had that here before. And the reason I describe that is that in some states they experience it for the first time, and it's a little mystifying, and they don't know what to do. And what our organization has attempted to do is to go to those states and those localities and train people as to what to look for and how to counteract it, and to recruit attorneys and other people who are knowledgeable of the electoral process so that when these occasions come up, they can be dealt with immediately, and we don't have to wait until the day after or the week after to adjudicate a whole lot of contested ballots.
All right, thank you.
And that's worked. That's worked in a lot of places, but we still have it in some places. There are some places in Ohio that I've heard about today where that's a problem, and we're trying to address it.
All right, thank you. We're talking with Don Fowler, who is a board member of No Voter Left Behind, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender. The Alaska Public Radio Network promotes Alaska's cultures, regions, and ethnic diversity, including a commitment to informing and empowering Alaska's Native peoples.
We have an email comment from Tamaron in St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea. And Tamaron says, you know, I don't know how I'm going to vote yet, but it appears to me that some people say they're voting for Obama because of his racial background. And voting for Obama because of the color of his skin is the same as not voting for him because of the color of his skin. I hope that when people go to the polls today, they will choose because they agree with their favorite candidate's views, not because of someone's skin color. That note from Tamaron in St. Paul Island. We're talking with Don Fowler of No Voter Left Behind, and the website is www.novoterleftbehind.net. And there's also that great comic book that Bobby Kennedy wrote.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Well, Bobby Kennedy is from a great distinguished family, and they're very creative, and most everything he does is of top quality.
Let's go to John, joins the program from Squintna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Tell Ralph Nader thanks for coming on. It's nice of him to do things for Alaska. Two issues I had. One was, I believe we voted two, maybe three times to move the Capitol with voter initiatives, and that has failed to happen. And if somebody could explain how that happens.
Oh, boy, would they ever like to do that. Yeah, they usually say it's money.
Well, yeah. I mean, but it's a mandate by the people, and yet the legislature refuses to do it. I don't know how they get away with that.
they say it's money. It's the what they call the Frank Initiative that, you know, once the people knew how much it would cost, then they didn't want to do it anymore. That's what they say anyway.
Yeah. And second, check me my math on this. I believe there is no combination of the Electoral College where our three votes would make a difference in the election.
Well, why would
I don't think that. I don't think that's true. Any three votes under certain circumstances makes a difference, whether they come from Alaska or Delaware or South Dakota.
Well, what I mean, the combination of, if you take the other states and the numbers add up, is more than three, the difference between any election. But I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, you could be. Not sure, John.
No, I think you are, because I believe that in 2000 particularly, a switch of one of the Dakotas or Wyoming, or for that matter Alaska, from then Governor Bush to then Vice President Gore would have shifted the election.
Yeah, well, I would think, Don Fowler, you would know. John, thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
All right, appreciate a call from Squinton. I think we got time for one more. Nikki joins the program from Juneau. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Nikki.
Hi. I think it was really great that you had Ralph Nader on earlier, and I was just, I was wondering, how many elections has he been on the ballot?
Oh, geez, at least four.
Four?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it's a lot.
What was the question? How many
times has Ralph Nader been on the presidential ballot?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's at least four.
Four, I think, is correct, sir.
Yeah.
Do you think that there might come a time when we might actually have an alternative party president? I mean, right now I feel a little bit nervous to go to the polls because I don't really know if my vote will count if I don't vote for either Obama or McCain.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the Native people would argue vote for them because Alaska's going in the bag for the Republicans anyway. So that way at least you make a showing. But you can argue it either way, Nikki. And it's not our job to be telling you how to vote. We're just kind of talking about the process. Great call, though. Thanks for your call, Nikki. Nikki and Juno, sorry, we couldn't really be any help. Don Fowler of No Voter Left Behind, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, Steve. And I hope you have a good experience up there today. And this is a great experience, a great civic experience for Americans. Elections are sort of the equivalent of revolution every now and then, because we peacefully come to the ballot boxes and change government and change the direction of government. And we don't have the problems in this country that a lot of people do when the loser gets thrown in jail or has to go into exile. We don't do that. It's
all
a great
right.
experience, and we need everybody to participate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your hospitality.
All right. Thank you, Don Fowler. Talk of Alaska back again next week. Building Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by the University of Alaska, the home of award-winning faculty, students, and alumni, and offering 500 different degrees and certificates. Find one that's right and do something major. Information at alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.